So I mean, I guess one thing I'd like to ask, there's a couple things, but in relation to our last conversation on Sinum Tao, you discussed a lot about chi.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you want to talk about that in relation to Chum Q and
sure. I mean, to me, there's a very straightforward progression. So if we just do a quick review back to Silam Tao, our first section is about learning how to cultivate and store and, slowly move your qi from the Dantian core of your body to the extremes in your hands and feet. And then in second section, you learn how to further release, not just move, but release that energy and long arm energy in all kinds of different layers and levels of center line and directions. And then in the third form, you start actually learning how to move the energy in combinations, as opposed to just single movements, but in combinations of hand positions that culminate in a hit, right? But all of that's done with a static horse. Now you're taking all of this idea of building energy, and now you're moving it while you're moving your horse, right? So you're generating more qi in addition to the ones that you cultivated through your qigong practice and learning how to funnel and focus it through Silam Tao. So just a simple forward stepping movement is so much energy available if we know how to funnel it efficiently and economically. The reason why many people, we want the big arms and all the big muscles is because they're not using their energy efficiently. They don't know how to use a simple step and just a little torque of hip movement simultaneously, right? So that straight line energy movement of a forward step, if you shift while you're stepping forward at the same time, that exponentially increases the amount of energy you have available to funnel through the structure of shoulder to elbow to wrist to hand, whether it be a block or a hit, and then release it with a little bit of jing, right? And we can talk about that maybe another conversation. You don't have to be a big person with a lot of muscles to have devastating power. You're just very, kinesthetically, somatically, martially brilliant in terms of how you generate, amplify, focus, and then release your energy. Again, I'll use another metaphor. I think I'm more or less accurate. If you look at sort of Grand Prix Formula One race cars, they have relatively small engines. I think they're not more than like 2-liter engines, right? But the way they are designed in terms of how they focus that power and energy and the chassis and the suspension and the lightweight materials, I mean, a very small engine can outperform, you get these big muscle cars, 5-liter Mustangs or whatever else, right, 400 horsepower, but they're so inefficient, so poorly designed in terms of how they transmit that power. Maybe they're great in a straight line, but they take that first curve and then they're rolling the car over. So, Wing Chun is more like the Formula One race car. You don't need a big engine to generate a lot of power and still have mobility and really hairpin steering and all those other sort of things that a great race car has. So you're back to the original question, is your Chum Q really helps you to start focus and shift and move your energy and your power, right? Just with good habits. When we talk about the three element theory where you're coordinating your hands and feet together, right? I mean, the energy is just going to naturally flow to that end point. And then when you finish the shift or you put the foot down, or the catch-up step comes, that's where you're really pulling the trigger and releasing the energy with the jing. Up until that point, the energy is just flowing forward, right? But you still have relaxation and sensitivity to feel. So again, taking this to the next level in a self-defense situation is, in Wing Chun, I don't commit to a strike until I know I'm going to hit.
Yeah.
Because if you commit to like throwing a punch or jab, like you have to commit to that punch and see whether it hits or misses or whatever else. And, if that person ducks, moves out of the way, like you have to wait for that punch to fully extend and then come all the way back before you can try something else. Wing Chun, we're just probing with structured hands and arms and feet, like water that's snaking its way through a river or through up against the dam, waiting for the hole to emerge. And then we flow into it. And then when I know that that person can't get away from the strike, and I'm talking literally like 2 or 3 inches away from the target, the face, the chest, wherever you're going to strike.
Yeah.
Up until that point, I'm just probing forward energy, but with very relaxed yet structured limbs. And then when I know through my sensitivity that there's no way that they can get away from that, then I pull the trigger on the hit.
Yeah.
But only until then. Only until then. So again, your chum Q can help you with that. Right? Your chum Q can help you just to move the energy, to flow, to have the balance, and know that the hit will come at the very last second. You don't have to commit to that.
So my understanding is that chum Q means something like searching for the bridge, seeking the bridge, something like this.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you could speak about what that means. Why is it called a bridge? What's the searching for? What are we searching for?
Well, we're searching for contact with the opponent on centerline.
Okay.
Right. And so the bridge is something for me to, you know, if we use that metaphor of the bridge. So I'm searching for the bridge. Well, what does the bridge do? Well, it helps you cross a threshold.
Yeah.
To get to the other side. And for me, to get to the other side is to hit. So I'm learning how to engage. And the searching is, well, I'm moving around trying to find and feel it, right? So I may not always be in a straight line facing the bridge. So sometimes I have to shift. Sometimes I have to step. Sometimes I have to turn. So that's the searching part. And then the bridge is, and you need to get engagement with your partner or your opponent on center line so that when you have the contact, right, you now have the bridge. Now your training in Chisao will train you how to cross the bridge.
Okay.
And you might have to do some fancy sort of footwork or movements to get across that bridge, but ultimately to get to the other side of the bridge, it's going to result in a hit.
Okay.
Okay. So the chum cue is the movements to get you to search for, find, and connect to the bridge.
Okay. I was wondering also, last time about Sinum Tao, we talked a little bit about breath in relation to the forms.
Mm-hmm.
So I have probably a beginner's question here, but how should we view breath in relation to the movement? So you talked about that in Sinum Tao, especially in the first section, it's a very slow inhale and exhale in relation to the arm moving out or in. But later on, when we're doing these quick releases and in Chum Q as well, are we sort of taking a breath with each? Is there like a exhale each time you sort of release the energy and inhale on the recoil or something like this? Or is it a more sustained breathing? Or do we even not focus on that consciously?
Well, I guess what I would say is you need to explore that for yourself. I have my own ways that I try and do it. And for me, it's just a very simple way. Because when a fight is on, whatever you have trained or, you know, is gonna match with whatever sort of survival instinct that gets activated in your nervous system as well. So what your training does is it's not trying to completely override your survival instinct of the fight, flight, and freeze, but it's trying to harness it and to work in relationship with it. And so there are going to be certain things that are going to be happening physiologically within you that you can moderate or modulate through your training.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be able to totally transcend, at least I certainly haven't, even after 25 years of practice, but I learned to be in relationship with it so it's not a hindrance. So let me put this again in concrete examples. So when I start cranking up my chum Q, moving faster, trying to generate more power, have a little bit more jing, typically what happens is the body wants to tense up, right, to create more internalized structure. Okay, so again, tension and structure are two different things. So this is where if we train slowly to, you know, keep adding more and more structure, but not crossing the line where it turns into tension, this is sort of a godhead of the training that you want to be able to focus on. And I have to do that at my own pace and speed so that I can be mindfully and somatically aware of that's what's going on. So the other thing that happens, I'm going to bring this again to your question around breath, is when I'm cranking things up and if I start to get tense, well, what happens is my breath gets shallow.
Yeah.
And then I've noticed not so much in Chum Q, but certainly more so in Bu Qi, that by the time I finish Bu Qi, which is really big, dynamic, explosive movements, I'm out of breath because I noticed that midway through, I lost the mindfulness around just breathing fully and deeply and getting the oxygen to my body. I'm just sort of less holding my breath and doing the movements, you know, pushing with this sort of anaerobic exercise. And at the end of it, I'm exhausted, I'm panting. Well, that's not ideal.
Yeah.
So play with your breath by just saying, okay, I'm going to go through Chum Q, this entire form, just focusing on full breath, no matter how fast or hard that I move, and I let everything else fall to pieces, because I just want to start to integrate my breathing, my natural breathing is more and more of a natural habit. in terms of how I move. So I wouldn't necessarily say, okay, on the strike or the return to center, I want to make sure I'm doing an exhale, or when I'm pulling the hands back that I'm doing the inhale. I haven't been able to find a natural pattern of how movement could naturally correspond with breathing. If my hands go forward, I exhale, and if they come in, it just doesn't work for me. I haven't been able to find that rhythm.
Okay.
So it's more but I can naturally breathe in and out while the movements are happening, whether they're coming forward, sideways, inwards, outwards.
Right.
So that I have been able to do.
More about focusing on, if you notice your breath is tense, then figuring out how to relax it and let it do what it needs to do in a relaxed way. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And remember, breath is doing two things, or at least two things. Number one, it's cultivating relaxation.
Yeah.
You know, that's important because if you're relaxed, you have increased sensitivity. If you're relaxed, you can actually let more energy flow through your body, which means you can hit harder or have a more effective block. Right. And then also, if you're relaxed, you, with that sensitivity, you also can feel the structure and how much more or less you may need. So again, these attributes all link to each other. But also, full breath creates chi. Like oxygen literally fuels the fire. Well, inside you with your neurochemical firings, your oxygen is part of that process too. So the more air that you can bring in without forcing it, I mean, some people can, you know, it's like, I mean, you know, that's not relaxed breathing. Okay, well, yeah, you get the energy. You get that sort of hyperventilation. And some sort of yoga practices will do that sort of like really quick firing up the energy, like in Kundalini yoga, like they will do these pranayama practices that fire you up, but you don't get the relaxation, you just get the energy burst.
Right.
Holotropic breath work, which can get you into some trance states, also does that too. Right. It gives you way more inhale and less exhale, so it really brings the energy up, but it sends you off into sometimes a trance or dissociative state, and obviously you don't want to be dissociative in your fight. So for me, for the martial practice, is I want it to have the energy, but I also want to have the relaxation.